It's happened again. Again. Shots fired, this time in a workplace. People speculate about the motivation, a disgruntled employee, perhaps mentally ill. Anything to push him away from us, to make him different, other. It couldn't happen here, except it did. This time, it did. It happened here, not 10 miles away. It could have been any of us. And maybe it was someone we knew and loved, or someone known to someone we know and love. Certainly fewer than 6 degrees separate us. And what of the brave four who rushed into the building, into the gunfire, running toward the sound of shots, engaging the one with extra ammo and the suppressor on his weapon? Surely many lives were saved because of their bravery and quick action. And yet, the killer took 12 lives before he was suppressed, subdued, silenced, stopped. He was stopped. And yet, the real killer still runs free, unsubdued, unsuppressed, unstopped, seemingly unstoppable. The scourge of guns in the hands of those who mean to kill, to wreak havoc, to instill fear. Why punish the law-abiding citizens who do not murder or maim? Is it really punishment to be separated from your rapid-firing weapon? Say that to the woman who lost her husband, her brother, her son, or to any of the ones who lost a beloved. What were the last words we spoke to each other? Were they kind, full of meaning, or were they mundane or even snippy, impatient? How will we ever recover? Today is June 2nd, the 153rd day of the year, and so far there have been 150 mass shootings in the United States. A mass shooting is defined as a shooting with more than 4 casualties. 150 in 153 days. That's one almost every day. Every day, lives ended, families shattered, witnesses and first responders devastated, forever changed. Now, I don't need to recite the statistics or share the horrific stories. The media do that. And it's important that we know the stories, and yet it has become so commonplace that it seems that nothing shocks us anymore. We have become numb, overwhelmed, grateful perhaps that it's not us, and then guilty for feeling that relief, which only adds to our sense of an inability to act. And then when you add politics and conflict about rights to the mix, well, that leads to what we have now. No change. No progress. We in the United States love our guns. More than one gun per person. From the Washington Post in a piece from last June, there are more guns than people in the United States, according to a new study of global firearm ownership. In Ireland, by contrast, they have more sheep than people. But we have more guns than people. There are more than 393 million civilian-owned firearms in the United States, or enough for every man, woman, and child, every person, to own one, and still have 67 million guns left over. Now, like so many issues, it's not just about one thing. We love our guns, but it's about the right to own guns more than it is, or at least as much as it's about the guns, right? Who gets to decide? You can't tell me what to do, not in matters that involve my safety or the safety of my family. And doesn't this really get to the heart of it? Who are we protecting? Who do we care about? my flesh and blood who might need me to defend them against armed intruders. Forget the statistics that say if you own a gun, you're more likely to be harmed by it than protected by it. Because it's not about the facts or the figures. For many, at least, it's about a primal instinct to have at our disposal the means to protect ourselves and our loved ones. And of course, for some, it's about the guns themselves, the intricacy of the works, taking them apart and cleaning them, appreciating their beauty as a feat of engineering. For some, guns are a way to engage in crime. But it seems that for many more, they are a symbol of freedom and of preparedness. And so we try to engage one another on the issue, but it feels hopeless because we are not hearing each other. Dale and I have a dear friend in Vermont who owns a number of legally registered firearms, and I doubt that he owns an AR-15, you know, a machine gun type gun, or would really want one, but he would fight quite vehemently for his right to own one should he want one. Now, this is a man who traveled from Vermont to New York City with his wife to celebrate her birthday at a concert. And on the way in, he bought an ice cream cone and had the ice cream cone as he was walking into the venue. And they said, sir, you can't go in there with that. Quite an argument ensued, and he ended up outside waiting for the show to end while someone else sat next to his wife in the performance. That's who's fighting for the right to own guns, right? Without any, you can't tell me I can't have ice cream in here. Don't tell him I shared that story. It's not really his finest moment, but I'm fired up, so I'll use anything to make my case. You know, there's great distrust among many of our government. And that's part of what this guns rights is about, right? That I have to be able to defend myself against the government. Well, you know what? If you don't trust the government, instead of buying guns, why don't you vote for trustworthy people? That's going to make us safe. And there are those who exploit this conflict over rights, this morass of emotion and fantasy and fear, and they use it to win votes, to raise money, to buy influence. Is it surprising that Russian operatives infiltrated the NRA as part of their scheme to influence US elections? So mostly, my friends, we bury our heads in the sand. We hope and pray for reason and compassion to prevail, and we put it aside. Until it comes to our door. 12 souls lost to an angry man with a gun purchased legally and with extended magazines of ammo that allowed him to fire rapidly without having to pause to reload, precious moments that might have allowed someone to escape or to try to stop him. Those people sitting in their offices, maybe packing up to go home for the weekend, had no chance against firepower like that. In fact, it took 4 police officers to stop him. Officers trained in combat, officers trained in firing weapons, 4 of them to stop him. I don't have answers. Like you, I am disheartened and devastated by this horrific violence so close to home. Yesterday, I got a call from our own Alan Perry, a member here and a police officer who is one of the first responders to an event like this. He called and asked if I would like to help as a chaplain, and of course, I said yes. I met him at the police headquarters right there at the municipal center. The Police Department of Virginia Beach assembled teams, a police officer or firefighter and a chaplain, each assigned as a team to each of the victims' families. So each of the 12 victims' family members had a team of a chaplain and a police officer. And our assignment would be to go and meet with the family, to offer comfort, to share information, to let them know that they are not alone. Now, I can't tell you which family I was assigned to, but I can tell you that it was a sacred task to be in their presence. And I brought all of you with me. In fact, feeling you with me gave me the strength to be with them at this moment of incredible grief and sorrow. As you might imagine, it was a difficult task. Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, says, "Look to the helpers. They will restore our hope." And yet, with one of these shootings happening somewhere every day, even the helpers must feel helpless and hopeless at times. The one glimmer of hope for me is that events like this one do remind us that we matter to one another, that we grieve together, that those who are traumatized by this kind of violence do not stand alone. And I will tell you that I offered this sacred space to any of the families that need a place to have a memorial service. I don't know if they'll take us up on it, but I made that offer. I hope that that meets with your approval. Thoughts and prayers and even hugs are not enough. I intend, as your minister and as a private citizen, to work on this issue of gun violence. We keep killing each other, and it must stop. I invite you, those of you who share this outrage and this sense that the guns and access to guns are a big part of this problem, I invite you to join me in this work. I'll be talking more about this in the coming weeks and learning more over the summer about how best to be helpful in this struggle. There has to be a way. There has to be a way to balance the rights of gun owners with the right to live in peace, without fear that when we kiss our loved one goodbye and send them off to work, that we might never see them again. We can do better. And we must do better. I'd like to close with a prayer that I offered at the Social Justice University that we held here earlier this year. Spirit of life, source of that which energizes us and connects us to all of creation, we know that peacemaking is blessed work. And yet today we are not feeling peaceful. We are hurting. We are angry and we are tired. We know there is work to be done and we aim to do it. May we find comfort in this gathering. May our spirits be renewed by joining together in our just cause. And may we be reminded that hope is the place where joy meets the struggle. May it be so. Amen.